Welcome to Healthy Family Connections, the podcast for families wanting out-of-the-box solutions to parenting and relationship challenges, with your host, psychotherapist and author of Ending the Parenting Control Battle, Neil D. Brown.
Think about this situation. Your teenager is basically a good kid. He does well when he tries, is personable and cooperative, but he continually screws up. Well, we'll talk about this and more on this week's podcast, The Adolescent Self-Destructive Cycle. It's sponsored by Neil D. Brown, LCSW, and I'm your host, Neil D. Brown, and I'm here to help you get that enjoyable family you work for every day. And if you have a question you'd like me to address on this podcast, don't be shy. We'll all benefit from your question, so come on over to my website, neildbrown.com, and enter it there today. And while you're there, download a free copy of my Parental Burnout Recovery Guide. And please remember, this is an educational podcast, not a substitute for therapy when you need it. Well, this week we're answering a question from Lorraine, and Lorraine is writing from Kansas City, Missouri. She writes, "My 16-year-old son is liked by everyone, and usually even us, his parents. When we ask him to do something, he cheerfully cooperates. He always falls behind in school and then has to play catch-up at the end of the grading periods. Instead of A's and B's, he gets A's, B's, C's, and D's. He has ADHD, and it was diagnosed in the fifth grade. He's on medication and sees a therapist once a week. But here's the problem. About every couple of months, there's some kind of a major issue: stealing alcohol from a supermarket, sneaking into some kid's house, and he and his friends were mad at, and then stealing his pot, plagiarizing on a report, sneaking out at night to hang out with his friends. We've had to hire an attorney to deal with some of these issues. His therapist says he doesn't have a drug and alcohol problem, and he wants to do well. He reports that he truly feels badly when he screws up. I try to stay supportive, but his father is fed up and disgusted with him. He thinks our son is just fooling everyone and is just a self-centered phony who knows how to get people to like him. I'm beginning to feel like a fool supporting him only to have him screw up again. What advice do you have for us?" Well, thanks, Lorraine. What you are describing is a confusing and frustrating situation for many parents, and it can be difficult to know how to stop this infuriating pattern. For starters, you have to be able to answer the question of what's really going on here. Your son's dad has reached the conclusion that he's a shyster who acts like a good kid only to get what he wants. You keep supporting him, and then you feel let down when he screws up. Is it ADHD? Is he a shyster who's fooling everyone? What's going on? Well, let's back up and take a look at things from a moral development perspective. What's moral development, you ask? Well, let's think about what morality is. It's the ability to see things from a point of view that is beyond one's self-interest. The ability to see things from the point of view of right and wrong. And beyond that, the ability to see that right and wrong are values, and to see that our values are not the same for everyone and every culture. Often we hold values that compete with each other, and then we have to apply judgment, for instance, loyalty versus honesty. Then there is the ability to make decisions that are consistent with one's values, which is not easy. For instance, you can imagine a teenager saying, "I know that cheating is wrong, but if I don't cheat, I'll fail. And if I cheat just this once, well, what's the big deal? After all, everyone always says I'm only cheating myself, and if it's okay with me, it should be okay with them." How do we develop our values and our ability to live up to them? Let's go to the womb here, because when we are in the womb, we don't know there is anything but us. We are the universe. And when we are birthed, it's still the same. It's all us. Nothing else matters or exists. And then, after feeding on mother's milk and our eyes open, we realize there is this other presence in the universe, Mother. And Mother meets my needs. It's still all about us. Then, as we become more settled in the world, we discover Father and some others, and our small universe grows a bit, but it's still all about us. Are our needs getting met or not? As we grow into toddlerhood and then, let's say, kindergarten, we begin to see there is an order to how our needs get met. If we cooperate, we get the candy. If not, we get the angry voice. There is an order to how the game is played. If we watch TV, I have to finish my dinner first. And our understanding of the order of things, how we get what we want, grows as we get older. Our understanding gets more sophisticated. In these early years, we grow our love towards our family members and maybe even our teacher or our friends, but it doesn't develop into real empathy or really understanding what others think and feel, but we do learn how to behave in socially positive ways. If we continue to get consistent support and have secure attachment to our parents or parent figures, we keep growing our confidence in ourselves and confidence that the world will respond positively when we behave positively. And after a while, we begin to realize a right and wrong way to behave. There are values that guide the rules. Hitting is wrong for a reason. Saying our pleases and thank yous is right for a reason. We have to be fair. But of course, it's still all about us. You're not being fair, the child protests as they identify the value that should allow them to get what they want. Well, now healthy teenagers, particularly older teenagers, should have an internalized value system that works for them. We should be able to hire a teenager who believes it's wrong to help themselves to money from the cash register. A teenager should know they have to get to the game on time or they will be letting the team down. And they should know, for the most part, that their homework is their responsibility and they need to complete it. Their sense of caring about others is much stronger than it was as children, but their ability to truly empathize is still very early and underdeveloped. We need to know that. In other words, as teens, they need to have developed values, including respect for others, keeping their word, being honest, etc. But adolescents are still very self-centered creatures. That, and they have a neurological tendency towards risk-taking and impulsivity. So, still being in the early stages of value development, incomplete empathy development, and a neurology built for impulsive, high-risk behavior can lead towards serious errors in judgment. But they should want to do the right thing because it is the right thing, and they should feel bad or guilty if they don't. Their conscience should bother them when they screw up. So as adults, you and I continue to grow our capacity for empathy and our respect for others with values different from our own, and for our ability to act in ways that represent our values more than our self-interest. On a small scale, think of someone you know who does thoughtful, meaningful things for others without remuneration or even being noticed for their good work. On a larger scale, we can think of Mother Teresa, Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr., as those who cared more about others than themselves. Currently, we've got this horrendous campfire situation in right around the town of Paradise, or what's left of the town of Paradise. There are unbelievable stories of sacrifice of individuals saving others at putting themselves at enormous risk to do that. And some of those stories will never be told. Others will be held out as inspiration. But those are examples of values at high levels. So, Lorraine, let's get this discussion back to your situation. As I describe these stages of moral development, development can be delayed or arrested at any stage. Our prisons have a lot of folks whose moral development was arrested before they developed strongly internalized values. There are others who are there with strong values, but they either lost sight of those for one circumstance or another, or they're part of a subculture that doesn't follow the law. They have their own underground law. For teens, generally speaking, when their parents bring them to me in counseling, they are either pre-value development, in other words, they have not internal. They might know if you ask them, is this right or is that wrong? They'll know what's right and wrong, but they won't have it internalized it as really caring about it and having it belong to them. And that's what your son's dad thinks your son is. Otherwise, they do have an internalized value system, but for one reason or another, they're in a pattern of self-sabotage. Lorraine, your son is in the latter group. How do I know this? Well, there's several pieces of evidence that you provide. His therapist says he cares. He is generally a positive, cooperative young man. He wants to be liked. And there are months between events, not days or hours. I mean, a manipulative kid who isn't value, does not have an internalized value system, can want to be liked. But that's a different feel than a kid who actually goes out of his way to please others. So now we ask the question, why do kids with internalized values self-sabotage? Generally, for one reason, a poor self-image, a lack of confidence in their worthiness, compromised self-esteem. So without doing anything wrong, they're starting out with a black or gray cloud surrounding them. They likely don't show it, but they feel it. Now, some more introspective and insightful teens will know that about themselves and may even see the process of self-sabotage, but they can't sustain the effort involved in making consistent self-valuing choices. They look to others for self-esteem and validation rather than from self-investment and growing it themselves. There is another less insightful or introspective group of teens with values, but they see the problem as outside of themselves. They will tend to blame the system, the teacher, the unfair rules, but this is all warding off the sense of unworthiness they feel. They do feel bad and want validation from outside, but they set things up so that won't happen. Your son's willing participation in counseling indicates that he's most likely the introspective, insightful kind of youth. Lorraine, your family has an active control battle that invites your son's self-destructive cycle. Because his father has lost faith in him and doesn't trust him. In fact, his father now sees him in a negative light, and you're mighty frustrated and doubting your own continued support. Your son doesn't have a firm family platform to grow his own self-esteem from. Here is how we can end this control battle, how we can starve the control battle beast, and we can help your son out of his self-destructive cycle. Number one, if you can, have your husband listen to this podcast because this will work better if he's on board. But even if he's not, don't let that deter you. Two, double down on your support for your son, that he is truly a fabulous young man who is caught up in a self-destructive cycle and that you want to help him out of it. Ask him if he understands that's what's going on and if he wants to change it. And I think he will respond positively and say yes. Next, take on falling behind in school. He has ADHD and organization and focus are issues for this group, so get a plan to support him staying on track. Perhaps a homework coach, tutor, or if you have the time and patience and the relationship to make a regular time every day for him to sit down and go over his assignments, make a plan and support him in staying focused, perhaps with short breaks and bursts of focus and effort, but getting it done. He needs the support, so let's make sure he gets it using one resource or another. He may object, say he doesn't need it, but the evidence is that he clearly does. When he starts making progress on getting and staying caught up, his anxiety is going to go down, and his self-esteem will start going up. And during this period, definitely limit his privileges, particularly limits to devices other than for school, until school and homework responsibilities are complete. Now, your tone needs to be clear, positive, and affirming. For any damage that your son causes, he needs to fix and repay it. For instance, if he damaged the screen sneaking out the window, he needs to fix it or replace it. Attorney's fees, he pays part of it. Stolen property, he pays for it and pays the same amount to a charity of his choice. Privileges on hold until this is complete. When he makes a mistake, don't lecture. Don't get down on him. Stay positive. Ask him about it. How did he make the decision he did? What were the elements that supported the choice? Why was it a bad choice? And encourage him to answer it from several angles, such as trust, hurt someone, honesty, self-destructive, damaging to his own self-esteem, engaged others in behavior that's bad for them as well, etc. So obviously I don't know this A situation, but you can always find 8 reasons why it was a bad idea. If in the same situation again, how would he deal with it differently? Have him write all of this down as an exercise. And privileges are revoked until he has done this exercise, repaid or fixed the damage from the breach, and has done some things to demonstrate commitment to self-valuing, value-based choices. So, privileges returning is not time-based. It's time, attitude, and behavior-based. In other words, it's up in the air. It's in his court. Let him earn his privileges back so he feels like it's something of value and he can feel proud of having those privileges. So you see, Lorraine, essentially what we're doing here is we're reversing the parenting approach. We've gone from being down on him but not holding him accountable to high standards to staying very positive with him and supporting him and holding him to very high standards. That gives him a chance to repair his self-esteem, see himself in a positive light, both through your eyes and his actions, and with a positive identity, your 16-year-old son will live up to and continue to grow his values and grow his potential. He'll get out of his self-destructive cycle. So parents and all folks dealing with self-destructive teenagers, coming down on them for their behavior supports their destructive and self-destructive behavior. So let's challenge ourselves. Rather than saying, you're a screw-up, we should be saying, why is a terrific kid like you making decisions like this? Let's think about that. Hey, thanks for tuning in today, listeners, and special thanks to Lorraine for her question. I'd like to remind everyone that my book, Ending the Parent-Teen Control Battle, is available in print, Kindle, and audio. So there's a modality there for you. And if you'd like to use my book as a guide for a parenting education or support group, shoot me an email and I'll be happy to visit your group via a remote meeting platform to meet folks and answer questions. But for now, please remember, take care of yourselves. You need it. You deserve it. You're worth it. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Healthy Family Connections with Neil D. Brown. If you have a question you'd like answered, head over to neildbrown.com/submit and enter your question for Neil there. While you're there, be sure to sign up for his weekly offering. You may want to pick up a copy of Ending the Parenting Control Battle at your favorite bookstore or online retailer. Join us again for the Healthy Family Connections podcast.